Coming up on Triangulation, I sit down and chat with John Hodgman, writer of the book Medallion Status. It's true stories from secret rooms. We talk about hard-boiled eggs and how to get the perfect one, and also a little bit about being vulnerable and being responsible for seeing people and seeing the gold in them. There's so much you're going to want to hear in this chat, so stay tuned.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Triangulation episode 421, recorded Friday, November 1st for November 8th, 2019. John Hodgman, Medallion Status. This episode of Triangulation is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring isn't easy, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple and smart. That place is ZipRecruiter, where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. Hello and welcome back to Triangulation. This, of course, is the show where every week we talk to the smartest people in the world about the most interesting topics. And I am excited today because I get to talk to Mr. John Hodgman about...
Oh, that's me.
That is you. Hello. Welcome.
It's lucky I'm here.
I'm so glad you're here. Yeah. It definitely would have been a hard conversation if I was having a conversation with John Hodgman about...
I think you'd do a great job.
Well, thank you. That's so nice. John Hodgman has a new book out, Medallion Status, and we are going to be talking about true stories from secret rooms.
Hold it up more.
Yes, you're right. There we go. I'm so used to looking
there
at
we go. I'm so glad you have a copy, first of all, because I like you and I hope you enjoy it. And second of all, I realized I don't have a copy.
Really?
I came over to my office and maybe I should have brought a copy of my own book to show.
Well, don't
but
worry.
I don't have a copy with me right now. I'm sending them all out to friends and family like you.
So they said, oh, no, we've got to – you had to dig in and get the copies that you have. We've got to send those out too.
Yeah. Also, just so people know, I'm selling them.
Yes.
Or I should say bookstores are selling them now. And you can find out more at bit.ly/medallionstatus. All capital letters, all one word, #medallionstatus, johnhodgman.com/tour, #alwaysbeplugging. I just have to get out my links.
Got out all those links. It is available where all fine books are sold, of course. And it has been out since the 15th of this month?
Yes. This is its second week birthday, I suppose.
Excellent.
Rabbit, by the way. I got you all.
You got us. Now let's go ahead and kick things off. We were actually talking a little bit right before the show because you had shared your Instagram, which apparently is, you kind of said that's where you are doing your thing now.
Yeah, that's where that's the least poisonous social media that I use at the moment. The one where I actually have fun instead of just feel terrible for humanity. Oh, there I am. I'm holding up my book. Good job, John.
Yeah, you did have one at some point. And
there's Toby Ziegler, the dog, reading my book.
Love that.
And that's a dog that I met in Prospect Park because I do all my own social media. And at some point, someone on Instagram said, this is for, please tell John Hodgman's social media manager that I liked this post or whatever. I'm like, I do it. I'm the one wasting my time, doing this all the time. And I made a video as I was walking through Prospect Park in Brooklyn, where I live, because I like to exercise in order to be immortal. And I'm like, I know this is not a good idea, but I need you to know that I'm doing my own social media, but I'm out here in the road and I'm going to get run over by a dog or something. And then this dog came really, I almost tripped over this dog. And I said, there, see that dog. And then later on, someone watched that video and said, that was my dog. The dog is named Toby Ziegler, the dog. I'm making friends with a lot of dogs on Instagram right now because I realize that they're more famous than I am. And I want to ride their literal, not their coattails, but their literal tails.
Their literal tails and their literal coats.
Yes.
Such shiny, soft coats they have.
Some of them do. Yes, that's for sure.
Well, that's wonderful. I was complaining a little bit because one of the things that the book talks about is how the super secret airline of which you are a part of Medallion Status, of course, is that there are delicious eggs of all things, hard boiled eggs. Can you? I don't know. It's just not a thing that I would think of. What is the fascination with hard-boiled eggs there?
So my new book, Medallion Status, is another book like my previous one, Vacation Land, of extremely funny, often profound, sometimes heartbreaking essays by me, John Hodgman, true stories. In this case, about what it's like to be a famous minor television personality and all of the secret rooms and exclusive clubs and first-class lounges that even the minorest of fame admits you to, and then what it feels like to be kicked out of those rooms one by one until you're me, not even as famous as the least famous dog on Instagram.
Darn.
But you're referring specifically to the medallion status, literally is a literal reference to an airline loyalty program where you earn different medallions the more and more you travel. These are not actual medallions. Don't get a prize. They're an imaginary prize, starting with silver medallion, which I do not talk about because it's a garbage medallion, and then you get up to gold medallion, platinum medallion, and beyond. And I don't name the airline in the book because I don't get any money from them. There's no co-branding here, but I'll tell you it's Delta, right? And so in the Delta Sky Clubs, I talk a lot about the strange mix of sort of actual kind of luxury in the Delta Sky Clubs and then the mundanity of the Delta Sky Clubs. Mm-hmm. But one thing they get right, and I'm going to say this, and it really amazes me every time. In the morning, hard-boiled eggs, they do them correctly. They do not never have I ever had a hard-boiled egg in a Delta Sky Club that has that green ring around the yolk, which is, you know how to avoid that, right, Micah? I don't know if you enjoy hard-boiled
eggs. No, tell me the secret. I do like hard-boiled eggs, but I don't know how to avoid the green ring.
In one of my many, many past lives and careers, I used to write about food and wine and cheese, which is a kind of food, for various men's magazines. And I learned, like, you hard-boil the egg, and then you immediately put it into an ice bath. And if you don't chill it, then that green ring it's an oxidization issue.
Okay.
A green ring. So I'm just saying the Sky Club is doing it right. They don't do everything right, but they're definitely avoiding that green ring. And as I say in the book, I can't help but take a picture, a congratulatory picture, every time I have a hard-boiled egg in a Sky Club. And that is why my Instagram account is so repulsive a lot of the time.
Just full of eggs.
Just full of hard-boiled eggs. It's disgusting. But there are other things too. A lot more dogs lately, because as I say, I'm trying to get in with the Instagram dogs. That's where it's at now. That's where entertainment is.
Yeah, that seems to be the case. And in fact, one of the things that you discussed in the book is you talk about, you know, being on television and how television kind of isn't on television anymore. And we've moved on to new forms of media. And what I'm curious, just in general, sort of what has that been like for you, watching the change from everybody gathering around the television to watch a show and people talking about, you know, the latest series on ABC versus now you've got bingeable content on Netflix, and now we're talking about adding like double speed to Netflix shows so you can get them in even quicker. It's kind of wild.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny how television used to be demonized in our culture. Mm-hmm. And now we look back at it as like the golden age of radio, when the family would gather around and listen to a story together and have something to share and talk about. You know, I should never have been on television. I started it as a writer. If you look at me, my on-camera career is, frankly, implausible. But I got kidnapped by television by Jon Stewart when I was promoting a book of humor. You know, now 15 years ago, we had a good time on the show, and he invited me back to be the resident expert on The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. And that gave me a very sort of fly on the wall perspective of how TV works and how celebrity works. And especially during a period of change, because back then in 2006, television was on television, mm-hmm, right? I remember the day that someone from Comedy Central came into the room that we would go into to do the postmortem after a show and showed us before the iPhone an iPod with The Daily Show playing on it. And everyone in the room going, that'll never work. No one will ever watch a TV show on a device like that. And then the iPhone came along, and I was at The Daily Show when they brought me to the Emmys, I think in 2008, where the big move was the Emmys was finally acknowledging reality shows as part of the primetime Emmys. And then it became more and more inclusive. And I was there the first time a Netflix show was nominated.
Wow.
And just wondering what's happening. And by the time I went to the Emmys for the last time in 2015 with Jon Stewart for, you know, not, it wasn't just him and me. I wasn't his date. It was the whole cast. Jon Stewart said, come with me to the Emmys. You'll be my date. But, you know, 2015 was the year that he handed the show over to Trevor Noah, where it thrives today. Mm. And it was also the last year the Daily Show with Jon Stewart was nominated for the Emmy, and they won. And the contrast, and I write about it in the book, the contrast between going to the Emmys in 2008 and going to the Emmys in 2015 was dramatic, because, you know, when a show like Lost was nominated, it got this massive round of applause just for being mentioned. Do you know what I mean? Not because you necessarily wanted it to win, but everyone knew what that show was. Everyone knew what was on television. And all of a sudden, here are these nominees for shows that no one had ever heard of, because they're not coming out on they're not coming out on 5 to 100 channels of television, but another 100 to infinity channels of streaming, tablets, social media, or whatever, you know. And so it's like, here's a nomination for the coach Friday Night Lights, who was on a show that no one saw except for 5 people, but he did a good job. And you would hear clapping way up in the balcony for the 5 people who'd seen it. You know, here's the show about women's prison, starring the woman who's really talented. We never mentioned that she starred in Atlas Shrugged anymore, because she's a good actor. And last year it was nominated as a comedy, and this year it's nominated as a drama, because we don't know what entertainment is anymore. And it's like, you know, clap, 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 clap. Right. And the thing that really struck me was, you know, just a few years after the Emmys deigned to include reality, unscripted television in their telecast, now 2015, I'm walking to my seat. And I'm walking in front of the front row where all the most famous people in the world sit. Mm-hmm. And I'm really kind of surprised that the Daily Show this year is like way house left out in Siberia, like really far away from the stage. John got a good seat, but we were all way out there. And as I'm walking, I hear these two friendly voices go, "Hey, John, hey, John." And I turn to my left and seated not first row, but like third row center, prime seats, were the Property Brothers. Jonathan Scott and Drew Scott. Yeah. And the Prop Bros, if you don't know, are these two handsome identical twins from Canada who have a big show on HGTV that I happened to watch a few times and thought was fun, but considered it real niche culture. Do you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And I did not expect them to see them sitting third row center at the Emmys, especially since I knew we had gotten to know each other on Twitter a little bit. At Hodgman is my handle on Twitter. Always be plugging. I knew them a little bit. That's why they said hello. And I was like, that's nice that the Property Brothers are saying hello. But why are they there? You know, like,
right. Well, I'm confused. Their
category had come up the week before in the Creative Arts Emmys, which is like the Junior Prom Emmys, where they shunt a lot of smaller technical awards, and the writing awards and certain awards go there, and they hadn't even won their category. I knew this. So I'm like, why are you guys there? They're like, you're here for the Daily Show, right? I'm like, yeah, why are you guys here? They said, you just wanted us.
They didn't know why, like, they were there in that spot.
They didn't. I thought maybe they might be presenting an award. They're like, nope, they just invited us here, and this is where they sat. I mean, they're the nicest guys in the
world.
Right. And so I said, well, I'll see you later. And I walked back to my seat. It took me about 2 weeks to get there.
Right. There was a huge mountains in the way.
Yeah, this is entertainment moves on. You know, the Daily Show, the liberal conscience of cable television for, you know, 20 years with Jon Stewart at the helm is coming to an end. Mm-hmm. But front and center are those Property Brothers. And at the party afterward, I mean, I had no idea how popular these Property Brothers were. And at one point, Jonathan Scott came over and said hi to me and took a selfie with me. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I was incredible hot property there. Uh-huh. And I was the hot property. Like, everyone's like, can you introduce me to them? Like,
you know them, do you?
Oh, yeah. Tina Fey's getting a selfie with them, and Kristen Schaal's getting a selfie with them. And John Hamm is making out with both of them for a while. That's just a joke, but he could do it if he wanted.
Yes, he could. That'll be fine. Yeah. Wow, that is quite the change there.
And look, here we are, you know, talking on an independent media empire mm-hmm. that's been going strong now for a number of years. And you know, I think back to the first time that I would listen to This Week in Tech when I learned about Twitter. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And look, you know, and that was during a time when Twitter was not just, you know, pure dispiriting poison that you poured into your eyes at 3 a.m. It was actually a fun community where you could talk to people and meet people and stuff.
Yeah, it was a nice time.
And now look where we are.
Now it is a royal mess. It is the green oxidization around a delicious hard-boiled egg. It is the thing that ruins the hard-boiled egg at this point.
I might just have to walk away. You pulled that together so well. Wow, Micah, good job.
Thank you.
What a callback.
You know, I try to bring it full circle as often as possible there.
Yeah. Right.
I want to nerd out for just a second. I of course looked at the cover for Vacation Land and recognized the design style there. And so I think that this is the case because I was looking at the back cover whenever I got the book for now. Again, always
hang on. I have a copy of Vacation Land.
Oh, you should hold that up. Yeah.
This place is a mess. I apologize. There we go. Vacation Land by me, John Hodgman. Will this be backwards? No. There you go.
Beautiful.
That's the front. That's the front cover.
And then look at this cover in the back. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Now
this is great.
Isn't this great radio?
This is the show, just rotating books.
Yeah, it's very it's all we do actually. It's odd to actually communicate during this. Now it says jacket design and illustrations by Aaron James Draplin Design Company.
Yes.
I am the biggest Draplin nerd. Well, they're bigger, I'm sure, but
there are lots of Draplin nerds.
Yes, I used to be a freelance graphic designer back in the day, and you know, consumed everything that Draplin was putting out. And so, I'm curious: is this something that your publisher set up, or is this something that you said, "I love the stuff he does. Please design my book cover"?
No, I mean one of the great gifts of being a little bit known for something mm-hmm. is that sometimes you get invited to parties, and I was invited to a party for a cartoonist, Chris Ware, and who's an acquaintance of mine, and Draplin was there. And Draplin, have you ever met him?
No.
He's just this big lovely Sasquatch of a man with a giant beard. He's like, "Hey man, I know what you do. You're awesome." Blah, and he just started talking at me, and I was like, "I know what you do too, and you're awesome." And you know, my first three books were all designed by an equally genius graphic designer named Sam Potts, who I went to high school with. Mm-hmm. But with Vacation Land and this book, I decided I wanted to try a different look. I really wanted it to look Vacation Land had a travel element to it and a very New England element to it because that's where I'm from, mm-hmm. and I wanted it to look like a travel guide from the 1970s. And who better than Draplin, who specializes in this kind of thick line retro 70s design aesthetic than to do it. And I asked him and he said yes, and it was a thrill. And if you don't know Aaron Draplin, his name is spelled Aaron space Draplin. You'll realize you do know him if you've mm-hmm. ever used Field Notes, those little booklets that you get to write your little notes in. He designed those and many, many other really super cool things. And he's a super cool dude who's got a lot of energy and thoughts on design and life that are really worth reading. He's got a great book out called Pretty Much Everything, which I absolutely highly recommend. Yep. So, yeah, Draplin, I nerded out for Draplin. It's a thrill that he nerded out for me. And it's been great to work with him on both this and the new book, Medallion Status, #medallionstatus, bit.ly/medallionstatus, all one word, all capital letters, #alwaysbeplugging.
I love it. Well, I am, it's great. This cover is fantastic too. And yeah, I don't know. I guess the only thing there to say is just that I'm jealous, I guess is the, where I was going with that. That's so cool that you got to work with
Draplin. He's a super cool dude and a super approachable dude and obviously in demand. But I would say pretty strongly that if you write him an email, he will write you an email back. Wow. And it'll be fun.
I'll have to do that.
Draplin, by the way, not to plug a different thing, but I have a podcast called Judge John Hodgman, and we're about
Never
to go on
it.
A little mini. Is that true?
No, that's not
fair
true.
Enough.
That's, oh, okay. not true. That's not true.
I don't know what people. I mean, I mean, this book, Medallion Status, is about, in part, about all the different jobs that I've gotten. I love jobs. To me, different jobs are like travel. You get to meet different people, explore different cultures. And so, you know, my rule is when someone says, do you want to do something interesting? As long as it's not a permanent job, I'll say yes. Awesome. And that's how I got myself into this mess of television and then off television. But I do have this podcast, and it's called Judge John Hodgman. It's on MaximumFun.org. And we're going on tour. And I only mention this because, there we go. That's our new logo designed by Draplin.
Of course it is. Look at that. Thick lines.
So hashtag gorgeous. Thick lines is his thing. Those thick lines. And he's designed a whole bunch of merch, new merch and symbols and logos for us that are we're going to debut on this little tour. We're going to Toronto, Atlanta, Washington, D.C., Portland, Maine. I'm forgetting one, Durham, North Carolina. And if you want to find out and get some of that merch and come see us do some live judging on stage, just go to johnhodgman.com/tour. Always be plugging. johnhodgman.com/tour.
Excellent.
I have to say all these different things because I do all these different things. And that's why no one knows what it is that I do, because I just love doing different things.
Well, hey, that's part of the reason why you're here, is to talk about all those different things that you do. And I appreciate that. I think, you know, there are interviews where the conversation is based exclusively around the book or the latest project that somebody's working on. But I think part of what makes talking to you in particular very interesting is hearing about these different experiences. Your ability to relate the different stories that you've come across in your life to the goals that you have, particularly in this book. I love how a nude oboe story can turn into a very heartfelt conversation about being vulnerable and being open and being honest. And actually, I was hoping you, if you wanted to talk a little bit about that, sort of, did you always know that you were going to lead with the nude oboe writer, or was that something that sort of came along?
To clarify, the oboe in this story was not nude. Oboes don't usually wear clothes at all.
That's true. Yeah.
I was on a show called Mozart in the Jungle for 2 episodes, and I was very excited to be on this show and to play this particular role because, you know, after being on television a little bit, you learn how the world sees you, and I think I'm a nice person, but the world sees me as a mustache creep, and those are the roles that I was getting cast in, a variety of mustache creeps and perverts and villains on various prestige cable comedies and dramas. But on Mozart in the Jungle, initially I was not a creep. I was the sort of mentor to the main character, played by Lola Kirk, who is this oboist, this young aspiring classical oboist. And in the first episode I was in, I got to give her a lot of really decent life advice. She was worried that she was, you know, she felt imposter syndrome, as we all often do, because, you know, she was following this career, but she knew in her heart she only chose the oboe because it looked cool.
Well, and
know?
Part of the it's reason like, was she kept dressing her oboe and it needs to be nude, and she didn't know that. So,
exactly. Right. Yeah, it ruins the tone.
Right. Yeah.
And I said, no, that's not being an imposter. That's being creative. That's inventing yourself. And that's how that episode had ended, with me giving her this great advice. And finally, I'm not a creep. But then it turned out I got the script for the second episode. It was like, oh, yeah, I'm a creep. I am definitely an imposter. I am a con man who is not anything that I claimed to be in the previous episode. And all of that sage, wonderful life advice, I was merely spinning to her, hoping to have sex with her. And I go to her apartment and she finds me in her bed, totally nude, except for an oboe. And I saw the script and initially I was very disappointed, because I was like, I want to be a good guy on TV. You know, everyone does. But then I realized, like, being an actor is being vulnerable. And when you are vulnerable in life, you learn things, even if it's hard and scary and terrifying. And getting nude, whether figuratively or metaphorically, is an opportunity to show the world yourself and see how the world sees you and let other people feel seen as well. So I was like, okay, let's do it. I'll get nude with that oboe. And they were like, there was a rider to my contract for the show that they had to give me to agree to this. And it was literally called a nude rider, which are two words that I had never thought would ever be put together.
Well, I have a feeling that President Vladimir Putin might be a nude rider, but outside of that, I don't think.
Right. No, I had to sign the nude rider, and the nude rider was really amazing because it's contractual language that is that was written in the first person as though I were writing it. And so I like the thing I signed said, I promise that the only nudity that will be shown will be partial frontal nudity. No other nudity will be shown, and that my genitalia will be covered by a nudity belt, a privacy garment, and an oboe. That was in the contract.
The oboe was like, there.
Those are words that I did not ever expect. That was not a promise I ever expected to make in my life. And if I were not married, that would be my pickup line. Like, there will be the possibility of partial nudity, but I will be covered by an oboe. Swipe right,
swipe
please.
Right, please. Swipe right for oboe. That is something. But to take that and say, because it was,
is I remember swipe the, right thing to say there. I'm an old man.
Swipe right
is good.
Yes. So I am not an old man, and I don't think that you are necessarily an old man. But we fall into that same category where for the longest time I didn't know which way was the correct swipe. But I do now know that swipe right is the yes, I want that. Swipe left is the no way. So if you want the oboe and the partial nudity, then you swipe you swipe right. Yeah.
Yeah, but everybody's got to be coming for you. You're a handsome, smart man who knows how to call back to hard-boiled eggs. You're on a live stream in the middle of the day. I mean, that's
something.
This is it.
Yeah.
Can I tell you about my new project that I'm really excited about? It's a live stream in the middle of the day.
Yes. Yes.
This happened by accident, but it's now become a frequent, and I think maybe the most important work I've ever done, that every now and then. In the middle of the day, if I have some time, I'll host an Instagram live talk show called Get Your Pets, where I will go live. People will request to join my live stream, and I choose them at random, and I will only talk to them if they have a cat or a dog or, I don't know, a bearded dragon, a hedgehog, a turtle, whatever it is, and I interview their pets. And it's incredible. It's incredible. So much fun.
I did not know about this. I have two dogs, and so I'm going to have to check this out and try and
Get your pets.
Yeah, I got to get Henry and Mizzy in there to have a conversation with them.
If you're following me on Twitter or on Instagram, if I say get your pets in 15 minutes, I'm about to go live, and it's an incredible – I talk to the pets, but mostly they don't speak English, so I talk to the owners as well, and it's a fantastic talk show of ordinary people and they're very, very usually adorable pets.
Oh, man, that's amazing. What's the weirdest – no, I shouldn't say weirdest. What is the most fascinating pet that you have seen thus far?
Well, I mean, the most exotic for me was somebody's hedgehog. I really wanted to see a hedgehog because that had been my nickname in elementary school, hedgehog.
Now, was this a good nickname?
You can't have them in. Yeah.
Oh, okay,
it was a fond nickname.
Gotcha.
I mean, people knew that I was prickly on the outside and had a very soft underbelly. So
there you go.
It was accurate. But and so that was very cute. A woman that I know, she and her husband have a farm, so I got to meet all of their turkeys and goats and other animals. There was an incredible tortoise once. There was a tarantula that was incredible. And sometimes the animals are incredible, and then sometimes the people are amazing. Like the woman Marzi, who fosters injured, you know, woodland creatures, mm-hmm. like squirrels and fawns and stuff. And
whoa.
You know, that's and so you know, obviously meeting an injured squirrel is incredible. But she's the star of that show. And then there's a guy who just had a cat. Like all cats are fantastic. All the cats and dogs are great. But you know, the cat was fairly normal, but he revealed that he was the caretaker of a very wealthy person's estate in remote Washington state.
Wow.
And I said to him, how many times a year do you watch The Shining? And he said, I've never seen it. And I said, don't.
Don't watch that.
Yeah, he's a really super interesting guy, and he's I think when I'm out in Seattle in December to do a show out there, johnhodgman.com/tour for all the details. And when I'm out there, he's invited me to go tour this super private, super expansive rich person's compound.
Uh-huh.
I think.
Are you going to take security?
I'm not going to take security. My guess is I'm not going to come out alive.
Oh, and so maybe you're just good with that.
Look, I've done my life's work, right? I've been on television. I was in Pitch Perfect 2. Yeah. I've written 3 books of, you know, arch ridiculous humor, 2 books of very personal funny essays. I mean, yes, I love my children and my wife. I do a podcast, but what else is there? You know, if I die in some, you know, if I die alone or disappear in some billionaire's compound in their pinball room or in their, you know, their wave pool, that's mm-hmm. fine. It's a good way to go.
An underground bowling alley, something like that. Well, see, okay, so here's what I think. I think if you had not done this Instagram live show, Get Your Pets, then I would agree with what you're saying. But you're doing very important work that needs to exist in the world. And so I just hope that you'll be a little careful while you're there, you know?
Yeah, you're right. I can't let those pets down. You can't. All the Judge John Hodgman people and everything else.
Yeah. Now, I heard tarantulas are pretty talkative. Is that the case? They're kind of hard to have conversations with.
No, I wouldn't want one as a pet. They don't bite.
Right.
But I just, they're bristly. You know what I mean?
Yeah, bristly. Yeah, that makes sense.
They're bristly and terrifying. I'd like to see an axolotl. Do you know an axolotl? The giant Mexican amphibian weirdo creature?
Is that the
creature?
Salamander thingy?
Yeah, a salamander thingy. I'd love to see one of those on Get Your Pets. I don't think I've seen a snake yet.
Really? So,
yeah, but we've had some different lizards and so forth.
Hmm. Have you seen Gordon the gecko?
No, but I really want I love animals that are named just regular human names. I met a great dog named Janet the other day. I would love to meet a snake named Dave. I don't know why that's funny to me.
That is.
Hey, if you're ever feeling down, by the way, my friend Gene Gray, who's an incredible performer and sometimes performance partner of mine, Gene Gray, G-R-A-E, Gene Gray, look her up. She does everything. But the way I got to know her was she was just posting picture after picture on Tumblr of snakes wearing hats. And it's the most incredible. There are a lot more pictures than you would think of snakes wearing hats, and it's a very cool thing to see.
What's the Tumblr account called? Snakes Wearing Hats, or is
I would Google Jean Grey, J-E-A-N space G-R-A-E, and then snakes, and then hats. That's how I would get at it. Or use the search engine of your choice.
That is how you find it. That is what you do.
Yeah.
You heard it here, folks. Well, we are going to take a tiny little break, and then we will be back to have more conversations about snakes wearing hats and all sorts of other things. I'm excited that we are being supported today by our pals at ZipRecruiter. So hiring can be a bit of a slow process. Cafe Altura's COO, Dylan Miskowitz, needed to hire a director of coffee, which sounds like the coolest job ever, for his organic coffee company. But he was having trouble finding qualified applicants, so he switched to ZipRecruiter. Well, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job, so you get qualified candidates fast. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter and said he was impressed by how quickly he had great candidates apply. He used the candidate rating feature in ZipRecruiter to filter his applicants and was able to focus on the most relevant ones. And that's how Dylan found his new director of coffee in what? Just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter makes hiring so simple. Again, just being able to go in there and say, hey, this is what I'm looking for, to filter it down to exactly the candidate that you want, and to have the service find the person for you is fantastic. Because I got to tell you, I don't know how I would find a director of coffee all on my own, putting that out there into the world. And so being able to go and use ZipRecruiter to do that is pretty great. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, That's ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. That's ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. ZipRecruiter.com/triangulation. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Thank you very much, ZipRecruiter, and we are back. We are back and ready to roll.
That's the good stuff, ZipRecruiter. Wow.
Yum, yum.
That's a big sponsor. Yeah, boy.
We are, of course, here with John Hodgman to talk about his book, Medallion Status. I like the true stories from secret rooms.
Yeah, I just want to say, ZipRecruiter, I got a podcast. I do a good live read.
Always be
I do a hot live read. Ask Dashlane. Ask Mozilla. I do a hot live read. ZipRecruiter, come on.
They sound familiar.
They work with us. I'm good. I'm co-sponsoring everything now.
There we go. I dig it.
Yeah.
I dig it. Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Are you on Instagram?
Yeah. Yeah. Twit.
What's the Twit?
It's a right? twit.tv is our Instagram
twit.tv.
Account.
TV. Yeah. All right. There you go. Right. I see you there. I follow you. Okay, let me just do this real quick so that people know. I'll do a quick. Sorry, everybody. I do my own social media. It takes up a lot of my day.
Just look out for dogs.
Right, here we go. Hey, everybody. It's me, John Hodgman. I'm live on Triangulation on twit.tv right now. Why don't you tune in? It's happening now, 1:38 p.m. Eastern Time with Micah. All right, we're talking eggs. We're talking my new book, Medallion Status. We're talking everything. Check it out. Go. All right, let's see what happens. I don't know.
Let's see.
Watch this thing.
We're going to see people hop in and join us live. I love it.
Live news. All right, there we go.
All right. So one of the things that
well, I'm doing my social media
I'm sorry,
right
now,
Micah.
You've got your posts. You got your hashtags you need to put up. I understand.
Boy. There we go. Hashtag always be plugging John Hodgman.
You know,
John Hodgman podcast. Medallion Status is a new book. bit.ly/medallionstatus. All one word, all capital letters. Always be plugging. Hi. It's me. We're back.
Whew, are you sure?
I'm sorry. I had a lot of coffee this morning.
I only had one cup, darn it. That's not enough. So one of the things that you talk about in your book, again, you mentioned being, I mean, the book is based around this, this idea of being a, what is it, gold or what are you now? Diamond medallion status?
I'm currently platinum medallion.
Platinum. I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Platinum.
No, it's fine. It's not diamond, obviously, but, you know, I still have some basic human worth.
Right. Yeah. But at least people say things to you. They say, now, they did say thank you for being
gold.
That's
how it started.
Yes.
I didn't even know. Like a lot of the book is about my my travels back and forth between New York, where I live, mm-hmm. and Los Angeles, where I was working for 2 years as a recurring guest star on a cable situation comedy called Married, where I played the third best friend of the leading male character. So I wasn't his first or second best friend. I was like the I guess I was kind of like either the Speaker of the House in the order of succession to best friendship. If something happened to the other best friends, I might have gotten in there. But and I was flying so much, and it was very disorienting and not easy for me or my family, which is part of the book. But one of the great consolations came to me when I was once again flying away, leaving my family behind, and I hand over my boarding pass to the gate agent to get on the plane. And she looked at it and she goes, thank you for being gold. And I was like,
that's what they call in
cinematography, a focus pull.
That was very nice. Wow. Whoa. The drama is there.
I didn't expect it to affect me so deeply. Cause I had no, first of all, I didn't know that I had racked up so many medallion qualifying miles on Delta that I had jumped up to gold medallion status. And I certainly didn't know that that meant that they were going to be saying, thank you for being gold. But as an only child who believed that praise and affirmation was the same as oxygen growing up, it was really something, you know, to be thanked for being gold. Because I think that, like, in many ways, we all just want to be recognized as human beings. We all think we're gold inside, right? We all want the world to see our goldenness we all worry, like Lola Kirk did in Mozart in the Jungle, that maybe we're not as gold as we think we are.
Mm, we're a little silver.
They think and that someone's going to call us out and go, get out of here. You're silver. Go into the garbage can. But mostly people don't get that affirmation. You know, they don't, they aren't seen. One of the things that was so profoundly, illuminating about being even a little bit famous was people saying, I see you. You're John Hodgman, or you're the guy that from The Daily Show, you're the PC, or whatever it was.
Is it John Hodgman?
Yeah, it's John Hodgman. That's the best one, because if they actually knew my name, then that meant they were somewhat familiar with what work I had done and put out in the world. But even if it were just like, hey, you look like the PC guy, which I used to get all the time from the Apple ads, right?
Yes.
And I would be like, well, there's a reason for that. I am that guy. And then people would go, ah, that's funny, but you do look like him, and then walk away. It's very weird.
You know, Tony Hawk has had that same experience. He talks about that a lot.
Where people say, you look like Tony Hawk, and he goes, I am Tony Hawk. And they're like, that's funny.
That's funny. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Television fame, even the kind of minimal fame that I have/had, is different than sort of having written a book or doing a podcast or doing a radio show or doing something like this, where, you know, people are here because they like hanging out with you, Micah. You know what I mean? Like, they engage with the other human being. Mm-hmm. But a television personality is someone who just visits their living room or their device or whatever. And if it's an actor in particular, you don't expect to run into them in a bathroom or, you know, on an airport concourse. You don't really, you think of them as weird. It's like seeing a TV ghost, and it's scary.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
To be there. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about it that way, because, I've talked a little bit about or understood the sort of, and I'm sure you as a podcaster too, there's an intimacy a perceived intimacy that people have because your voice is right there in their ears. And in the case of shows like this, where there is video involved as well, you know, I've had experiences where someone recognizes me from something and they will have a conversation with me as if we are best buds, because they can make the inside jokes that I've made on podcasts or things like that. And it's a little bit off-putting for me. It's equal parts off-putting and flattering, and you know, I do feel gold in those moments, but I also feel a little bit like, whoa, I need to get to know you first before that happens. But I hadn't considered how that's different from, like you're saying, the TV ghost. And
yeah, if you're just the PC on the Apple ads, or you're just known as a character, or even, I mean, Tony Hawk is Tony Hawk, but he's such a big celebrity that the idea that you would run into him, you know, in a mall or wherever humans go these days, I don't know. there is a sort of uncanny valley, isn't the word for it, but this sort of like, this can't be happening sort of feel, like this is just too strange.
Yeah.
And so people, you know, will reject it, and they will say like, yeah, you do look like Tony Hawk.
But you are not him. I know.
you can't be Tony Hawk.
That's not possible.
You know, the book opens with, you know, as I say in the book, I'm not on television as much as I used to be, but that's okay. Neither is television. And I'm recognized less and less. And when I'm recognized, though, I'm glad to say it is because I do the podcast Judge John Hodgman, and I write these books, and I offer myself fairly nakedly. Mm-hmm. I ask for consent first, but you know what I mean? Metaphorically, I offer myself nakedly. And so when someone says it's John Hodgman, this is a huge moment of flattery, because like, oh, something I did connected with you, and that's wonderful. And even when it's an uncomfortable time to be recognized, like, for example, in the opening of my book, when I'm having kind of a fight with my wife because our car is
bleeding to death,
I can tell. Yeah. You know, these two young people up in, you know, far coastal rural Maine found me getting, you know, yelling back and forth with my wife because the front passenger footwell was filling up with this noxious reddish liquid that I didn't know what it was, and it was coming out of some car hole. I don't know what cars are. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah. What even is a car? Is it alive?
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. No, I was like, it's bleeding to death. What are we going to do? You know? And all of a sudden, this nice young couple came up with their little baby, and they're like, it's John Hodgman. And I'm like, hi.
Oh, man.
And because it was such, And, you know, you, I kind of, there is, I partly wanted to say, and maybe could have been justified in saying, this is a terrible time right now. I'm mm-hmm. sorry. But instead it's like, no, this is, it is a gift to be seen
yeah.
and to be recognized, because you have to remember that most people on this earth are not seen and they are not recognized even within their own families for who they are and their gold and everything else. So it's that's one of the things that I learned from fame, which is to make sure you see other people, mm-hmm. the people that you don't see in your life, that you walk by, that you don't consider to be in your life, that you see them and you are decent to them.
So you do feel that's part of your responsibility then, to make sure
as a human being, yes.
Well, yes, as a human being.
I feel it more keenly now that I now that I appreciate how important affirmation is in other people. When people are doing a good job, say so. And when you leave your hotel room, like, leave a tip.
Yes.
someone's coming in to clean up your disgusting residue, and you should be generous to those people.
Right. Absolutely. Well, speaking more specifically about, you know, having a certain level of fame and having folks who are interested in the things that you're doing, I'm more curious about that in terms of your do you feel you have a responsibility to be accessible to those people? And I want to compare here to and I know that this is a little bit of an odd comparison, but a person like Beyonce, who does not, for the most
part.
That
is a perfect fair comparison.
Right, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty really much parallel, just, yeah.
Pretty right much there. The same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So on one side you have Beyonce, on the other side you have John Hodgman. But with Beyonce, you know, she, for the most part, her social media is run by somebody else. She doesn't post a whole lot. Every once in a while she makes herself open to people. But then there's someone like Conan O'Brien is an example of someone who talks about this a lot on the podcast that he does, about trying to be available and present, and trying to say, you know, if someone does come up to him, then he makes himself available. But like you said just a moment ago,
Conan O'Brien has a podcast, huh? Interesting. He has a podcast now, huh? Oh, maybe that's why podcasts are big right now.
Oh, seriously, boy.
I would have thought that if he'd had a podcast, I might be on it. We're both from Brookline, Massachusetts. I've been on his television show. Huh, interesting. He must have overlooked calling me.
Yeah, Conan, you should absolutely be on that podcast.
I want to be your friend, Conan. I know your podcast.
But what you said earlier, you know, you felt like there was this, you could have very easily said, now's not a good time. But you chose anyway to have this conversation, to recognize these folks. And so I'm curious, kind of, have you had situations where you're trying to find that balance of making yourself accessible to people because you feel it's your responsibility, versus saying, no, this is an okay time for me to be separated from it?
Well, I mean, I do draw a line that if I am with my children, mm-hmm. I prefer not to get into a conversation or take a picture or whatever, just because I don't want my kids seeing me that way. Mm. Now that they're older, it's a different situation. And I want them to see me being adored and loved by members of the public, because they're full-on teenagers now, and they think I'm terrible.
Right. So you have to remind them how cool you
that.
Are.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. That was really the only line that I drew. I mean, obviously, I'm not Beyonce, and Beyonce has a responsibility. You know, there are people who are at a level of celebrity that it is impossible to lead what you or I would consider to be a normal life. Mm. And they have a responsibility to be protective of their own lives and their children's lives.
Right.
And they need to be inaccessible to a certain degree in order to be sane and happy and healthy. Mm-hmm. But I betcha, you know, Beyonce seems like a pretty incredible person. I know that she must feel incredibly loved and empowered and grateful to that fandom. Do you know what I mean?
But right. Absolutely.
There's more, you can't give of yourself to everyone who wants you at that level. It doesn't scale. Do
right.
you know what I mean?
Yeah. 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 There's only one of you. And yeah, to be able to open yourself up to all that.
Exactly. And Conan is obviously a very super talented and wonderful and famous person, and highly recognizable because He looks like a mutant.
Right.
You can't miss Conan O'Brien because he's 30 feet tall and he's got his hair's on fire.
And his pants are like multiple pants sewn together in order to fit.
Exactly. So, right. And, you know, for me, it's not that I do consider it. I think that anyone who is lucky enough to do something that's in the public eye and has fans, I think, you know, there is a kind of a moral obligation when they see you to see them back, right? To see them back. And I am much more interested in asking questions about their lives than answering questions about my life, because all my questions are answered for you in my books, Medallion Status, Vacation Land, etc. But yeah, I feel that there's a it's not an obligation of fame. It's an obligation of human decency that when someone sees you, you try to see them back. And then, you know, on someone who's on my level, I'm very happy to not be on television. Well, who am I kidding? I want to be on television. Come on, put me back in the game. I really want to be there.
Come on, coach, get me back in there.
I'd love to be on a show. You know what I mean? But I also really love the work that I do as a writer and as a podcaster, as a live performer, as the host of Get Your Pets, where my life is very intimate and open and interacting with other people. I find that fascinating. It's personally fascinating, very rewarding to me. And I have to be open to them because that's kind of the deal that you make when you are working in a more intimate form of artistry, where, you know, even a stand-up comic I think they're revealing themselves. And so if someone wants to reveal themselves to you, and I'm talking metaphorically here, not taking off all your clothes, you have an obligation to see them at least and be decent to them. I don't think that there's a celebrity, and I put quotes in it because celebrity is becoming so many, many different things now. You know, there isn't a known person in the world who does not feel a real sense of happiness and happiness and responsibility to be decent to the people who are being so decent to them.
That's really well put.
I can't speak for the dogs, though. I mean, I don't know if the dogs feel that responsibility.
Right. It's a shame they don't speak English.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and among the collage of book elements and plot elements from Medallion Status that are on the cover, there are two corgis right in the middle of it. And those are very specific corgis. It's Chompers the corgi and Linus the corgis, two very famous corgis of Instagram that I met at an exclusive entertainment party
for
comedians. Well, no, I thought it was for humans. it was a private party at San Francisco Sketch Fest. After a bunch of us had performed, we all were invited to Adam Savage's secret workshop in San Francisco. And we were so excited to be there. And Adam Savage has all these incredible, he makes all of these science fiction and fantasy movie props, these perfect replicas of spacesuits from Alien and Admiral Akbar's and all this stuff. And I was like, I've really made it. This is exactly where I want to be. And then I looked across the room and I saw these two people with these two corgis. And I'm like, I don't know who those people are in comedy. I don't know who those people are. And I turned to Kevin Murphy from Riff Tracks. I said, who are the two creeps who snuck in here with a corgi? Who crashed this party? That's like, who invited them? And he's like, oh, the people weren't invited. The corgis were.
Oh, my God.
Because one of Connor Listoka, who's one of Kevin's colleagues, is a huge fan of these corgis on Instagram. And I looked at their accounts and like they are doing co-sponsorships with different brands. They have massive internet followings. There's another famous corgi of Instagram that I've met, and I don't want to out them, but there were just a couple who had this corgi, a couple of humans who had this corgi, and they started taking pictures, and all of a sudden their corgi has a manager.
Wow.
And manages appearances and co-sponsorships and all kinds of stuff for them. And it's like, yeah, I don't know what fame is anymore, but I can't beat them. I'll join them. So on every tour stop so far in the Medallion Status book, I've been trying to get a famous corgi of Instagram there just because I want this thing to sell.
Oh, yeah, there's me. Chompers.
That's me. Yeah, that was Chompers and Linus, our big reunion. A couple of years after I met them at that party, I invited them to the to my book event there in San Francisco, and we had a great time. Oh, you can't follow corgis. Corgis are the headliners. That's always the case.
And they steal the show.
Right.
Oh, man. Well,
I also, well, that's a story for another story. But I mean, we are in a world now. Like my story is very specific and weird, you know, in part because not everybody gets to go on television and be famous, mm-hmm. particularly back at a time when television still had that kind of power, which was diminished compared to its power 20 years earlier, but still was sort of the social aggregator of attention, right? Now culture is even more splintered than ever, and everyone has this opportunity to be famous within their own world. Mm-hmm. So, but mostly I think the message of medallion status is about when you lose status, when you don't drop down from diamond to platinum medallion in one way or another in life, when you lose a job that sort of defined your life because you've aged out of it, or you just get fired, when you get dumped in a relationship that you thought was going to last forever, or when you age from being a parent of young children, when you are the most famous person in the world to them, to a parent of teenagers, where they're like, your jokes are terrible, Dad. I don't ever want to see you again. You know, when you lose status and when you lose the things that you, it's easy to define yourself by status and privilege. And when you lose it, you have to figure out who you really are. And that's sort of what medallion status is all about.
That's a good a bow tie on that. And so I want to
see, it's not just you who can do it. You know what I mean? It's like when you lose status, it's like when you get a perfect hard boiled egg. See, I got it.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me run the calculation on. No, that
one's
not working.
Don't look
for
at
me.
That one too close.
One thing that I wanted to ask you about, too, is, yeah. I mean, you are putting yourself out there in many forms of media, be it on television in some places as audio and in excellent prose. And I'm curious, how do you see like the difference between writing versus the other forms of media, including hosting a show about pets? Like what makes writing unique, and what do you find rewarding about that in particular, or challenging about that in particular?
Well, writing is the worst.
Okay.
It is lonely compared to any of the other things that I do. Everything else that I do is I'm either in conversation with a collaborator like Jesse Thorne on Judge John Hodgman and all of the guests, or if I'm acting, you can still see me on The Tick season 2 live. You can stream it on Amazon. You know, acting is like incredibly fun summer camp because you're with incredibly talented people and there are snacks and fun times and so forth. Writing is just you by yourself confronting nothingness and having to make something up. And you have some people do not have the problem that I do, which is A, I'm not convinced that I have an idea. B, I'm not convinced that once I have that idea, it will be worth sharing. And yet the reason I return to it is that when my brain stops screaming with anxiety and starts letting me see what it is I'm thinking about. And that only happens through writing. Like when you write, it's like therapy. Like you just talk out your stuff and all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's what I'm feeling. That's what I'm thinking. That's a connection that I didn't make in the moment that I now see. That is a kind of revelatory experience that doesn't happen if you're just doing an interpretive art or having a conversation. And so that feeling of learning what is on your mind is a very powerful one, and I think the place where I create the stuff that is best for not just me but a few other human beings. So I just got to do it, I guess. I wish I didn't have to. If I were on a really good TV show, boy, I wouldn't have to do it ever again. Put me in.
Put you in, Coach.
Yeah, no, I say they say you know, my agents will sometimes say, well, what kind of TV show do you want to do? And I'm like, aside from any, well, I don't want to travel because that really hurt my family. That's part of medallion status. Mm-hmm. I'll do any super interesting project almost anywhere in the world. If it's really interesting, I'll do it. If it's a Marvel movie, I'll go to Atlanta. That's fine. But what I really want to do is work at Steiner Studios. It's 20 minutes from my house here in Brooklyn. Drive there like a straight up dad, park my car, go into work, come back. And they're like, well, what kind of show you want to do at Steiner? I'm like, any garbage. I don't care. That's
really?
All I want.
So yeah, you would pay Creepy Mustache, play Creepy Mustache again if it could be.
Of course I would.
Yeah.
Look, I'm in wardrobe. I look like a straight up villain.
I don't think you look like a villain today.
Anyone is shooting anything at Steiner Studios, I'll go. I will go over there right now and be in your show. It's just the greatest. It's the most fun.
So do you feel that is the most fun thing that of all of the different jobs and projects you've said yes to, acting is the most fun?
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what you don't want in life is just fun.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like genuinely it's play. I mean, it's pure play. Mm-hmm. There'll be long hours, obviously, sometimes difficult personalities, but you know, you get to dress up in a costume and play, and then there's snacks and it's fun.
It sounds like you really like the fun. Craft services helps make that more fun.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever experienced craft services, but if you can just wander over in the middle of the day to a table full of, you know, peanut butter filled pretzels and cheeses and stuff, it's pretty awesome.
So it's there, oh, yeah, and it's a Delta Sky Lounge are the two places where get those.
I love a buffet. It's true. And I think it shows. But I think, yes, in Medallion Status, I don't just talk about the jobs I had on television, but all the jobs I had when I started working as soon as I could at age, I think, 15 legally in Massachusetts. I started getting jobs. I love jobs. And I learned a lot from the jobs. And some of the jobs were really fun and easy. And those are the ones that make you feel like tempted to live in them. Working in a video store was like the funnest, easiest, wonderfulest job. With all I did was watch movies all day and talk with my friends. And you can't just do the fun jobs, because if you just get stuck in the fun and easy jobs, maybe someone will invent Netflix and then you won't have a job.
Wow. So is that the real sort of kernel of truth behind what you're saying there, where you can't just have the fun jobs? Or is it also about gaining life experiences through some of the jobs that maybe are not as fun?
I mean, the main thing is I spent 7 years after college working at a literary agency surrounded by incredibly smart and supportive colleagues doing work that I believed in, which was helping authors find publishers. I was terrible as a negotiator, and I did no one a favor by negotiating for them. But I spent 7 years doing it, even though I knew in my heart what I really wanted to do was make stuff myself, and I was scared to do it. And I've dug trenches. I was a traffic counter in the cold. I was a cheesemonger. I've had all kinds of terrible, I was a dishwasher. I've had all kinds of hard jobs, but the hard jobs are not the worst jobs. The worst jobs are the jobs, maybe even the most comfortable jobs you're in, but it's the job that you know is the wrong job for you, but you're too scared to make a change.
Holy
and so that boy. That's the thing. Yeah.
That
bad jobs are great. Bad jobs are where stories come from, right?
That's true. That's how you get to write these books. I've got two questions now. Well, one, I'll make the observation first, not a question, but the observation.
Sure.
Is just that simply.
Right. I'll leave for the observation because you don't need me for it.
Yeah. You step away. I'll do that. I agree.
I want to hear your observation. Yeah.
I agree with Mr. Hodgman about the bad job being that job that you are comfortable in, and you know, you let that comfort sort of drown out your light, as it were. And yeah. I have had one of those. And
what was the job? It's not this, is it?
Well, no. The problem is it was not too terribly long ago, and so I don't want to say that. But what I'll say,
what
I'll say is that choosing to leave that job continues to be the best decision I ever made. And I am a being who is very drawn to, I think a lot of people are very drawn to comfort and sort of, you know, the consistency and feeling locked into something and feeling good about that. But taking that step and making that scary move and saying, you know what, this is fine, but I'm not happy. This is not great for me. Was the right thing to do. My question now is,
yes,
what in the world
good
is
job. Good job, by the way. You did a good job.
Thank you. What in the world is a cheesemonger? What is that?
Someone who sells cheese. You mong cheese. What do you mean? I was 19 years old. I was taking a semester off to live in London on a collegiate drink abroad program of my own designing, and I got a job. I did telesales. I was an usher at the Hammersmith Odeon when a bunch of concerts were there. But then I worked at a cheap. Why am I blanking on the name of? Motorhead. That's what I was there for. Motorhead. Why am I blanking on the legendary band Motorhead? But then the top job that I ever had was working at the cheese shop on Butte Street in Kensington, London. And I just turned cheeses over. You have to turn them over twice a day so that the moisture is distributed properly through them. Fine cheeses, French, Irish, and English cheeses. It was a great job.
You know,
great
job. That's why we actually turn the books over, is to keep the moisture.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's right. You got to keep them turning.
That's, you're very skilled there. You learned this book turn through your cheesemongering. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, I should be on Home Shopping Club. Like, hey, order now.
Vacation Land
medallion status bundle available now. Only for full price, only at bit.ly/medallion status.
And
that's MEDALLIONSTATUS, all capital letters, all one word, bit.ly/medallion status. If you want to learn more, my name's John Hodgman. You can find out where I'm going to be next by going to johnhodgman.com/tour or following me at Hodgman on Twitter and at John Hodgman on Instagram. How'd I do? Good?
You did well. In fact, I was hoping that I could hire you to do that part of this show. So whenever we have people on, if you want to just do the part where we talk about the other person's sort of social media and where you can find them online, we'll just have you pop
in. You know, I do a hot live read. Yeah, absolutely.
This is true. You do a hot live read. Did you hear that, ZipRecruiter? He does a hot live read.
Yeah.
Well, John Hodgman.
What are your social meds?
Oh, my social meds? Oh, gosh. I guess I'll be plugging, too. Okay. I got a thumbs up from the engineer. I didn't, but I'm going to go ahead anyway.
You're allowed?
It's at Micah Sargent on everything, on Instagram, on Twitter. It's all just my name.
MIKAHSARGENT?
ENT. No A.
ENT. Oh.
You were so close.
Now ZipRecruiter isn't going to sponsor Judge John Hodgman.
I have to say, I am impressed with your spelling, though, because you just spit out that medallion status quite quickly. So either you practiced or you've won a spelling bee or two in your life.
Practice makes perfect.
Practice does make perfect.
Maybe I should have practiced saying practice makes perfect because I couldn't say it.
John Hodgman, it has been an absolute pleasure conversing with you.
Thank you. The pleasure is mine, Micah. That's at MIKAHSARGENT on all social medias. Check it out. Hashtag always be plugging. Medallion status is my book. Sorry to do that. You just get into a role.
I love it. You know what? It's good. It's good. You've got to check out this book, Medallion Status. Again, available where all good books are sold. And October 15th is when the book came out, with beautiful cover art by Mr. Draplin. Same for Vacation Land. If you haven't checked out that book, you must as well. And
it did come out October 15th, but I guarantee you we still have copies for sale. They're still out there.
Not yet
sold out. So yeah, you have a chance. You still have your chance. Get your last copies now.
There you go. You've got to hop on that before they run out. No, they will be there. You should get them. And in fact, Amazon was suggesting that I get it on Kindle, so I went ahead and did that as well.
Well, good for you. Thank you very much. I'll sign your device at some point.
Please do. Actually, if you could sign the audiobook version. I don't know how you do that, but I've got tapes.
I'll record my signature as a voice memo and send it to you.
Thank you.
Hey, if people want to get their books and stuff signed and get that Draplin merchandise, November 6th, we're in Toronto. November 11th, we're in Portland, Maine, and all different kinds of places between them. Judge John Hodgman Live, johnhodgman.com/tour. Sorry to keep pushing it, but you know, what I've learned in this new age of social media is the window goes by fast. Mm-hmm. The window of attention drifts fast, so I need to keep repeating those things. I'm sorry.
If people bring a wheel of cheese to you, will you turn it for them?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's beautiful.
That's easy. It's already round.
This is true.
No listening.
I'll have to come hang out, bring a wheel of cheese, and show you my egg boiling skills now that I've learned the ice trick. It's all figured out. All right. Well, John Hodgman, again, we thank you for joining us today. Go get that book, Medallion Status, and, you know, try for medallion status of your own. This show records live every Friday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern. That's 11:30 a.m. Pacific, which is 18:30 UTC. You can hang out in the chat, have conversations while we are doing the show. And occasionally I'll pull some questions out from the chat and throw them up there. So yeah, thank you so much for joining us today. And one last shout out to Mr. John Hodgman.
Thanks so much for talking to me.
Yeah, thank you, John
Hodgman. Is this the end? I can't tell. Things don't have formats anymore.
You are free to leave whenever you're ready.
Oh, well, goodbye then.
Goodbye.
Thanks.
Thank you.